We're the podcast queers deserve, but not the one they need right now. So you listen to us, because you can take it. But we're not your queers. We're silent guardians, drunken protectors, queers with beers.
And welcome to another episode of Queers with Beers. I am your host doing the intro every day.
And I am Ariel Silvera.
Right, and this is our, as I count on my fingers, fourth episode of Queers with Beers.
Queers with Beers, Forza!
Oh my god, did you really just make that?
just go with it.
Alright, we'll go with... Yeah, that design looks terrible. Context for this comment can be found in the outtake of this episode, so if you wish to fast forward, the number 4 will be in the show notes, because I'm not going to explain that.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
How are you? How are you doing?
Pretty good. I am less hungover than you.
Okay, I guess we want to start with that. Okay, so...
Yes, we are starting with that.
Okay, so on my end of things, this is... queer with Doritos and a can of Coke because I am just fresh off Dublin Pride, which has meant like a week of too much going out, too much drinks that I couldn't afford and magically materialized through me not buying it, and and a lot of partying, and yesterday was the march, and yeah, I'm basically, I'm going to spend a couple of days in recovery because there's been a lot of drinking. So yeah, queer without a beer in my case, as it may be. I mean, I'm talking about like that on Friday before Dyke Night, I started drinking at like 5 p.m. and I stopped drinking at 2 a.m. So this should give you some idea of how things are.
Yeah, I will say I can't absolve myself from being hungover this weekend. So I met up with a friend and some of their friends who I'd met like once at a party. I ran into them at the grocery store and I ended up over at their house playing drunk apples to apples. And the thing to understand about this drunk apples to apples was it was not like normal, oh, I'm going to like take a sip of beer or something. It was, I brought over, possibly inadvisably, the bottle of liquor my father gave me that is terrible that he bought on clearance and thought would be hilarious. Yeah, I made him drink it when he bought it for me too. It's Premix Alabama Slammer, which, if you don't know, is like one of those bar shot cocktail things skinny young people get, and that tends to be an awful idea. And anyway, so I had a bottle of that, and I had a bottle of the Evan Williams honey, which is just like wild turkey honey, basically, because I knew that was slightly palatable. And apparently we had over at their place a bottle of Bowls green tea liqueur.
Okay.
Which, you probably have never had this. I think it's, like, only American. I'd never heard of it.
Green tea liquor.
Yeah. Okay, think about taking, like, that pseudo-artificial smell of green tea.
Yeah.
And making, like, dry erase markers that smell like that and taste like that. That's about what Bowls green tea liquor tastes like.
That doesn't sound incredibly palatable.
It tastes awful. It tastes a bit like you dumped Everclear into a bottle of Arizona green tea with honey. It's the best way to describe it. I did not purchase this. This was my friend's fault. His second job is at a liquor store, and it was $2.99 at his liquor store. They have not been able to sell it. So, like, apparently months ago he bought it, and it has just stayed at their house on their floor and never opened. So me being, like, curious... It's like, all right, let's open that fucker and see what it tastes like. And this one single action I took involved into the idea that we were going to play apples to apples. And every time you won, you had to take a shot from one of these three mediocre to awful liquors. I got to be wasted that night. That was, and the next morning was worse.
I thought the night was bad, and then the morning came.
Well, the act of playing apples to apples was fun, but I was basically drinking bathroom ginswell for about 4 hours. We stopped at 12:30 we stopped, and then I had to sit in their apartment sober up for a while until I could go home.
Okay, so let's just make it clear. So regarding a comment you made earlier, so adults don't buy expensive toys, but adults do stuff like this. Like what you've just described.
I don't know if we've ever actually counted as adults. We did have the MST3K on in the background, so... but...
Fair it is. Fair enough.
So yeah, you don't have liquor. I have a Guinness. It was in my fridge. I was trying to get rid of it. Yes, it's another non-ironic fake Irish... Well, okay, it's technically Irish, but whatever. It's not what, like, real Irish people always drink.
Is Guinness really expensive there?
It's more expensive than your average beer, but it's also canned Guinness, so it tastes kind of like watery stout. It's like drinkable stout, but if you've had, like, if you've had a stout that's actually brewed in America that they didn't have to ship over from Ireland, those stouts are much better than Guinness, so.
I can imagine.
Yeah, like, I'd like to actually have Guinness when I make it, because that seems like it would actually taste much better.
Well, I'll tell you that the flavor of Guinness depends when you get it on, as you say in America, on tap. Although here, here it's a different place. But anyway, that I can't remember at the moment. But so it largely depends on how it's poured, and that can vary very greatly depending on who is on the bar. So even if you go. If you go to the Guinness factory and do the tour, or you get a free pint, although the tour is like 10 euros, so I don't know why you want to do that when you can get a pint for like less than 3 euro. At the end, even though you're where it's made, it might not be the best pint of Guinness because the people at the bar might not be the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the best one I've had in all my years here was actually at the faculty pub in University College. Which is not open to the public. So there you go. So I guess that's what's going on, and that's what we're drinking. So we're going to move on just right away to the Transfemme Queer segment, in which we're going to talk about video blogging and YouTube. And later on, our second segment is going to be the geek segment, where we're going to talk about Batman. You're listening to Queers with Beers.
And we're going to go ahead and move into our next segment, dealing with video blogging / vlogging. I call it vlogging because it's easier. So I don't know what you will call it. I will just say the word vlog.
I don't use that simply because I have a small problem with the B's in English. Okay, very quickly, where I come from in Spanish, we pronounce both B's kind of the same. And it is something that I always find really, really difficult to make that distinction, to remember to make that distinction. Picture it, if you will, as a parallel to the R and L thing with the Japanese language. So I just see vlogging and I just say blogging. So I just say video blogging for clarity.
Okay, that's actually, I didn't know that. I have now been educated. Ariel, you actually have done some video blogging. I don't, but I study it. So I think we're going to start, and you can maybe like talk about some of your experiences and what you got out of it. And then I will have some other stuff I'll kind of go into after we've kind of talked about kind of like your experiences of video blogging.
Sure. Well, I've been on YouTube since like day one. And, so I was already like quite acquainted with it, and I had seen some video blogs in general before, but not really, and nothing that sticks to mind. But not when I was first coming out a few years ago, I turned to YouTube to look for stuff, and sure enough, there was some. You know, nowadays there's like way more, but back then there was like, I could only really find one video blog that was a trans person, you know, documenting their transition or talking about all their different stuff. And at the time, I was identifying as genderqueer, and so was this person. And eventually they came out as a trans guy, and eventually I came out as a trans girl, although, you know, it's more complicated than that in both this person's case and my case. But yeah, so that did inspire me, and a couple of years ago I started a video blog. Now the problem is that I kept it up for a bit, but then like I kind of went off it. A year later, uploaded one more video. This year, I uploaded one more. So it's one of those things that's always in the back burner, and I always have ideas for it. But then in the end, I have not been as prolific a video blogger as I would like. But yeah, my experience, I mean, it's largely been like, you know, I've had like a very positive reception by other trans blogger video bloggers, you know, even with as little as I have uploaded, people have been really receptive and really warm. I have had only like two or three transphobic comments, and it's been stuff that's so minimal, really. It's like a comment that just said in all capitals, "Shut up." Or a comment that said like, you know, you're stupid, you know, just really silly stuff. There was only one recently.
Well, to be fair, it's also YouTube. YouTube is notorious for just the acquisition of idiotic and or very virulent comments.
Yeah, but yeah, so that's going to be my experience. I mean, recently I haven't been following video blogs that much. I guess I haven't. I've only been following the video blog of a friend of mine, and I haven't just really, I don't know, I kind of fell out of that. Every now and again, I'll watch something, but for the most part, I've fallen out of it.
Well,
but,
I think, like,
yeah.
Kind of finding something in video blogging, it requires a certain investment that other forms may not basically require you to engage in.
Yeah.
That's something I found with, that really, it kind of requires an investment, and it requires that you become a part of what I've at one point I've done a preliminary map of the network. You can actually, in some ways, because of the way YouTube is built, map out the network, and you have to make the investment to connect yourself with enough other people in this network that you start building connections outward, and you actually develop some kind of prominence. You have to take that effort, and you're like, and also there's just the effort of you have to be willing to watch the videos. And you have to be willing to engage with them. And that requires a certain investment that may be sitting down and reading something. It may not be the same. Tobias Rown, who is a doctoral student at a university, I'm forgetting where he is. I want to say it's a Danish university. I've spoken to him once or twice. He, part of his dissertation is doing interviews with trans male vloggers, talking about kind of their experience and what they get out of it. But he's published one paper talking about what he calls the idea that blogging for people who are being in the transition is a site where they're having what he calls a screen birth, where their new self is kind of being born on the screen. And that entire act, it requires so much emotional investment and investment in engaging with others. And it's a lot more personal than, say, having a blog and you may journal about your experience and some such.
Yeah, but the thing that I think needs pointing out about YouTube is that, I mean, YouTube, we still have the same barriers that we have all over the internet in terms of language and culture, because even, for example, even though we have like a lot of common language between UK, Ireland, America, Australia, New Zealand, still the trans network is still largely American and still largely American from certain places.
Yeah, no, that's something I've been looking into, trying to map out as well. And I mean, I've spoken to you about, and I'm speaking to some other people I know who are kind of connected, and I'm specifically looking at the way I've mapped out my network and maybe trying to do it with Spanish language, ideally I would hope that there might be some common slang terms that cross over different kind of, I don't know if you would technically call them dialects in Spanish, but kind of cross over different communities in different countries where the actual spoken language may differ a little bit.
This is the basic problem, is that in different parts, like the Spanish-speaking world is massive and diverse that we have very different words for very different identities, some identities that exist in some places and not in others. Then you have the fact that a lot of places, there is no, I mean, when we're talking just about video blogs, the truth of the matter is that a lot of these areas of the world, the usage of internet is not as big as the Anglophone world. And so there's just not that much stuff out there in comparison to like stuff that you would get from the US and the UK, for example, you know, to just limit to those two places. So there is that issue as well. And the issue that if you are a trans and or gender variant person of one of these parts of the world, and you go on YouTube, what you're going to see is really most of the time you're going to see like, you know, American, maybe UK stuff. Like I was very pleasantly surprised recently when I had the Gender Outlaws book, the Gender Outlaws The Next Generation, I was very surprised to see that my friend Francisco from Buenos Aires, who is he's a trans guy from Buenos Aires, he's in that book. And I was like, wow, okay, this is really good. But Francisco became well known in the kind of like in the online trans, you know, blogging and all this stuff because he was blogging about his transition, but he was blogging about it in English. He was very, very severe, very heavily informed in a lot of what he was saying by American activism, and you know, he's like completely fluent in English. So there's like all these things that set him apart that made it so that he actually had a voice in the Anglophone community.
Right now, I'm really just kind of exploring this possibility. Because those are the things I'm always having to keep in mind as I think about trying to do this, is that there's a number of barriers to looking at this project again, and actually what drove me to even consider it was the fact that so much of this, like, people who are visible are, you're right, they're basically come from, like, that Anglophile group of white Europeans, like, whatever, white Europeans is basically what you see, and so that's something that I would like to investigate, but really I'm kind of at the planning stages of even seeing if this is possible, or if there are so many determinant factors that the way I'm approaching it now might not be the way that I can actually follow through on this. But anyway, this has kind of gotten a little unrelated. But okay, stopping here. How do I connect this to what I was going to talk about otherwise?
What did you want to talk about otherwise?
Oh, well, I was going to go into what I've been thinking about with video blogging. Idea of participatory surveillance. Also, I was going to walk into.
Of what? Say that again.
Actually, no. I think I know what I can. It's the idea of participatory surveillance. It's from, name. Give me a second. Let me look it up real quick so that I have the guy's name. It's in my Delicious, so. But
I'm hungry.
Well, you can take this opportunity while I look something up to grab some food if you want to get.
No, I don't have anything that I can just grab.
Oh, you have to make stuff. You have to take effort.
Yeah, I just I ate my Doritos already.
Fuck that shit.
I know, right? and I am looking at Macross toys. I still look at Macross toys. Shut up, they're beautiful. Do you have aircraft carriers that transform into...
You can.
Into
I love that you can so tell you're hungover because your ability to articulate sentences goes down a little bit. Nothing against that, I'm just going to say.
It does. Well, I'm doing quite well when we're actually recording, don't I?
Yeah, actually you are. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and restart and go from there.
Sure.
Okay. Let me come up with, like, an introductory sentence real quick. But I guess the main thing I've been focused on more recently is thinking about YouTube. Part of what I'm thinking about is YouTube is a system dominated by search.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, search is the ultimate arbiter of whatever video you made will be seen or not. Because, like, if, say, someone searches for the term F2M, they'll pull up vlogs, and at that moment... they're basically gaining entry into the network through the term. But the way to find these people is through terms. So really, once you start identifying as F2M on YouTube, at that point you can kind of be seen as F2M, and you're seen by not just, say, other vloggers, where maybe, say, like, if YouTube used a group structure where you join the male vloggers group, and really it's about all the people who are in this identified group. With YouTube, it's about searching, so say someone is doing something else and they're looking up other stuff related to trans men, and they say happen to use the term F2M to look for videos. At that point, then they're getting given access to vlogs, and because YouTube uses suggestions, these vlogs link them out to other vlogs, and at that point you're kind of gaining entree into this world of trans men and their vlogs and their experiences. And the big thing that I haven't said is that this audience, ideally when I'm thinking about them, they're not a trans person. They're someone who I think of specifically for Americans, there may be someone who is cis, but someone who votes. But they've never really encountered trans people. And so the vlog is an entree into what it means to transition and what it means for a trans person to talk about themselves without, say, the filter of a documentary or the filter of fiction as written by a cis person.
Yeah, or even the filter of fiction as written by a trans person, as in, or the filter of journalism. It's just like such thing that, in a way, it's much more direct because you can spend your entire life in this society reading about trans people, and you can read a lot of things, but you can, like, if you're a cis person, never actually be cognizant of trans, of actual trans voices and trans faces. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that's what's so great about YouTube is you have this possibility, or even if you're looking for on what would seem like trans terms, like you look up the word testosterone, and you'll have a case of there, because part of like with vlogging with trans men, one of the things they do is like injection videos. One of the things you'll probably pull up is going to be a trans man's injection video.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you're being entrained into like these kind of what I've termed as like trans objects that are objects that are related to being trans. And at that point, again, you're being connected to it. And I always, whenever I say that, because I always use testosterone videos as an example, because at one point I was talking about my project to another person in my cohort. He actually is just going somewhere else to get his PhD. And I was just talking about what I do, and I think I mentioned at one point injection videos is one of the things that's kind of a part of the vlog format. And he looks at me, and he's like, and I didn't even know he'd ever seen this. He was like, oh, yeah, I know. One day, I just, like, ran across one of these, and I just watched them for hours. And so he talked about how, yeah, I don't know how that worked, but... yeah, how you start out with just one injection video, you just run across it because YouTube has suggestions. You see, oh, there are other videos like that. And suddenly you're like, oh, there are lots of other videos like that. And in some ways they weren't immediately visible because I don't look for them and they're not suggested to me. And so they're not like at the top layer of visibility because YouTube doesn't promote them. Once you're hooked into the network, you can start to see, oh, there are all these other connections. There's the other people doing the exact same thing. And I found, especially for a certain kind of cis viewer, that has a fascination that can be useful for, like, ideas of being visible, is that suddenly they want to see more of it, not just because they've never seen it before. Most often they won't have. But it's not just that. It's that they're actually really interested and engaged with these very personal experiences because they're so unmediated.
Yeah, which you would think would inform actual makers of documentaries, or hopefully will start doing so, because, I mean, clearly, I don't think anything in this world can become popular just by appealing to trans people. So, like, there's clearly, like, a lot of cis people watching these videos and absorbing these experiences.
Well, that's the same thing with YouTube, is that you can still make a video that really is, like, talking, in some ways, like, the first... this first part of our podcast is, in some ways, it's a little bit in-group. You need to know the kind of language and the things we're kind of talking about to get the value out of the discussion. But at the same time, I think there's more value in the fact we're not always explaining everything, and that's what you see with vlogs as well. You're a cis viewer, and you may not know everything, but if you're the interested kind of person who's going to engage with that, you'll engage and you'll reach further, and you're going to get more and more unmediated voices. In some ways, that's much more interesting than having the story explained to you through another person's gaze. The cis gaze is never going to be applied, unless it is applied by the trans vlogger themselves, and, like, they have this active concern about, like, how they want to format themselves toward the cis gaze that is used to a certain kind of acceptable cis body.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing I want to emphasize as I talk about this idea of the cis gaze, because it seems very much like I'm taking the position of, oh, passing is terrible, know what you want to do, and at that point you're buying into the system. That's not true.
You see, this is where I'm going to come in, and I'm going to say that talking about the cis gaze is something that would be a terrific topic on itself. This is what we always say in the Transform Your Career segment. We find something that we say, this one thing, I think this is one thing that I would like to have a whole segment about.
Exactly. We keep getting segments out of these discussions, and I will say a lot of what I'm talking about may seem somewhat disconnected. I've done a post on my blog that's talking about part of my research where it's really looking at this process step by step by step, walking through what exactly this means in the system of YouTube, and I'll have linked to that in the show notes, so if my kind of rambling was interesting enough. All right, I think at this point we're going to go ahead and move on to the much lighter segment, which, as Ariel said in the beginning, will be the geek segment about Batman.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed. Roger, ready to move out.
Okay, and we are back with Chris Abir for a geek segment in which we're going to talk about the Batman, or as some people that have been reading comics in the last 10 years know him, the goddamn Batman. And that was like Christian Bale meets Frank Miller for your worst nightmare. So
yeah, naked mole rat Frank Miller.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Yeah, I feel that's the best running joke I have about Frank Miller yet.
Hey, that's good. Basically, yeah, I just like I had like forgotten all about. I grew up like really liking Batman comics, and I just had forgotten all like. Batman was off my radar, and then I started watching the Hey Ash, What You're Playing videos, which we've linked before, and I will insist we link again, because they did this really hilarious take on The Dark Knight, where Ashley Birch imitates the Heath Ledger Joker, and she does a perfect impression. And so I was like, I'll watch The Dark Knight again, and blah, 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 and so on and so forth. And right now, I guess the most recent thing that I've watched is Batman Under the Red Hood, which is a film that came out last year, so it's the most recent Batman film, but it's an animated one. And it's interesting on a number of counts. One is that I believe it was a direct-to-video release. Or,
yeah, it was one of what they call like their DC original movie somethings. But yeah. Basically, yeah, they're all direct-to-DVD movies.
Yeah, and I had never seen one of those before, I think. I mean, except for like some that were attached to the animated series, but that was like way back when. This is like recent stuff. And it really surprised me in a lot of ways, because one thing that's really interesting is that it assumes a level of familiarity with Batman, but at the same time, it's not attached to any ongoing Batman TV show or anything. It's just its own thing that has nothing to do with The Brave and the Bold or with the Batman or with the old animated series. It's its own thing. And basically the film just tells it starts with like a bit that's basically taken from the old comic A Death in the Family, in which the Joker kills the second Robin, Jason Todd. And then it kind of skips to the present day, quote unquote, in which they've added this storyline that happened in the comics a few years ago, which is that Robin takes on, basically this new villain shows up called the Red Hood and like tries to take over all the mobsters in Gotham and become the top mobster or whatever. And then spoilers, turns out it's Jason Todd. And this was like a big shocker in the comics community because, you know, Jason Todd was like Uncle Ben. He was dead, and that was like a big deal. You know, he was not a guy that he resurrected. But so then there was like a lot of controversy around that. And I will admit that when I heard about that from the comics, I was kind of bitching out about it a bit because I read the original story when I was a kid, and it was really shocking but also amazing. So it was like a big betrayal. But actually watching it in this film as one cohesive story that links both sides of it, it's actually really it's really good. I could have, you know, it's like I would totally see this as a live action film as well. You have John DiMaggio doing the voice of the Joker. And he is a really good Joker. He's literally wedged in the middle of Mark Hamill and Heath Ledger, and I don't know how he does it, but he does it really well.
I was really surprised by that. He did an incredibly good job, given how Mark Hamill has basically... I know he's going to quit after Arkham City, but he's basically turned that into his job now. Like,
yeah,
Mark Hamill, I play the Joker.
So Under the Hood, it's a good film, I recommend it. It also shocked me because there's some points in the film where you have, like, good old comic book violence, which is not something that I had ever seen in an animated Batman production because, you know, it was all TV stuff that, while it was very mature, it was also kind of aimed at kids as well. So, like, there's some points where it's like, oh, that guy got their head blown off and there's a big blood stain in the wall. Wow. So that was actually, in a way, really positive. The negative aspect of it is that despite there being so many cool female characters in the Batman kind of mythos, the only one that shows up in this, if I remember correctly, is Ra's al Ghul's daughter, Talia, and she shows up for like 2 minutes and does nothing. She's like a background character to Ra's al Ghul, who is already a background character in this film. So that was really disappointing. But yeah, that's kind of my recent stuff with Batman. How about you?
Yeah, Under the Red Hood, I watched it a while ago. Actually, I got it from the Redbox, which is like a DVD rental service we have in America, right after it came out, and so I saw it for $1. And I was fairly impressed by it. It's certainly much better than the Gotham Knights shorts they put out right around when The Dark Knight came out.
I haven't seen those.
Gotham Knight is incredibly uneven. I think part of the problem is that you're trying to meet animation studios from an entire different part of the world with a different kind of sensibility for American comics. And some of them turn out really well. And then some of them, I don't know, they're just... Okay. The thing about Batman is that there are certain things that feel like Batman products.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that don't feel like Batman products. But then they will be have the Batman name on them. Okay. And you're like, but this doesn't feel like Batman. And, it's that thing you get with a gut reading of a heavily branded comic book character product, basically a superhero product. We expect a certain thing out of the product, and they don't deliver. And because the product isn't good enough on its own to make up for those faults, you just go, I'm not feeling this.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing.
I think that was the thing with Gotham Knight, where some of them are actually really good and really well-produced and well-written, and then some of the other shorts, Batman is in them, and he may be the title character. However, it doesn't really meet what you kind of expect out of the Batman brand product.
It doesn't hit the right beats, basically.
Yeah, that was a long explanation of basically that it doesn't hit the right beats.
No, I get you, and that's something that is something that I'm trying to reconcile about, because I recently rewatched The Dark Knight, which I originally... It was one of those cases that I originally didn't see it in the theaters because I saw Batman Begins, and while I liked it, I was like, I guess I was not that enthralled with it because I didn't... I liked it, and it wasn't up to me. This goes for both movies, okay? I like them. They're okay as films. But for me, the way in which those films don't hit the Batman beats is that they are too realistic. And I think that there's only a certain amount of realism that you can have with a comic book superhero. Of course, depending on the comic, but we're talking about Batman here, right? And so...
Yeah.
For me, the issue with those films, and it's really emphasized with The Dark Knight, is that I'm watching this film, and it's basically an interesting action thriller about gang and crime and political corruption and police corruption, and oh shit, there's Christian Bale with a raspy voice and a rubber bat costume. It totally... this is meant to be a gritty, realistic thing, and I just like...
Well, yeah, that's the thing is when you cross vigilante with superhero, you have to remember, the problem of superhero, as basically the American comics industry has defined it, involves that point. It's like, it's a dude in a spandex and or armor costume that is clearly branded. It's a product. It's like, okay, so we have this vigilante character and there's like gang violence and drugs and there's this crazy guy who... gives himself a name, but that kind of naming process makes a little more sense because it's like gang violence. So there's a sort of logic to it. You see what I mean?
Yeah. And
with the Joker.
No. Yeah.
Yet with Batman, suddenly becomes it's this dude in armor and he has a logo. There starts to be a breakdown in the level of believability you can imbue to it, especially when Christian Bale does his delightful. I both have laryngitis and am terribly constipated.
But this is the thing, like, if you ever go back and watch the Tim Burton, the very first Tim Burton Batman film with, Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton, he does different voices for Bruce Wayne and for Batman. He does it's not so hammy, and that's the thing, you know, because, I mean, this is the thing that everyone says about this film, but I'll say it, it's super hammy the way Christian Bale does it. And the thing when you're talking about the Joker in The Dark Knight, it's like you're right that he fits in so much better with that film because he just looks more real. You know, he's like a guy in like badly mismatched, dirty clothing.
Like I hate to say, they've built him clearly on the model. This guy is schizophrenic out the wazoo. What do homeless schizophrenic people look like? Well, in schizophrenia, you tend not to take care of yourself as well. Your mind is occupied with other things.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of parts in that film that feel really weird with him because he can figure everything out too perfectly, which is of course ridiculous. But I mean, okay, it's a superhero film, so there's some licenses that need to be granted. But kind of I've taken the tack recently with this film, which is like it's one of my unpopular opinions. Yeah, it's a fun film to watch, and I just enjoy it just for Heath Ledger being amazing as a Joker. But I don't think it's really the best way of presenting Batman, because I think that there is, it's, and it's really interesting that this film came out around, is it the same year as Watchmen? Am I right in saying that?
Let me check the IMDb's.
The IMDb's. Or at least, I mean, it didn't come out like massive more than it was like about a year after.
It was fairly soon.
It was around the same time, but the thing is that Watchmen...
It was, The Dark Knight came out in 2008, Watchmen came out in 2009.
Yeah, so more, so, yeah. And the thing about it is that to me, it's that makes it curious to me, is that you have The Dark Knight being so incredibly gritty, you know, with Batman that I don't feel fits that level of grit. And you have Watchmen, which is meant to be much grittier, but then in the end, because they were being so textual to... They were doing much... Like, The Dark Knight has a lot of adaptation into it, which I value, and I think that's important.
Yeah. No, Watchmen was basically, here, we took the comic, we photocopied it to some film.
Yeah.
Watch it.
Which, you know, it has its pros and cons, but in the end, it just... There's all this grit that comes across really well in the comic that you don't get in the film.
What I actually find really interesting is comparing all of the kind of live-action Batman appearances in a timeline, because one of the things is... And I will say, as I say that I own this object, I did not buy it at full price with any intention of desiring to watch
Let's have it.
I own DVDs of the original Batman movie serial from the 40s, which very few people have seen.
That sounds really interesting. I've only seen, like, little clips of that, and some of the... I think one of those serials has the Robin with a fro, am I right?
Maybe. I think I've seen about two-thirds of them. It's been about a couple years. But I find it really interesting to compare Batman from back then...
Okay.
...to the Batman products now. Beyond the fact that the 40 serials also have a yellow face character...
Oh.
It's interesting to see that the 40 serials are actually kind of sort of trying to be... Like, as gritty as a 40s serial primarily aimed at children can be, seeing that transferred to the 60s series, which is, like, basically the other end of the Batman spectrum, and then the 70s Batman basically languishes. In the 80s, he languishes until he enters the mind of Tim Burton, at which point all of Batman is basically filtered through Tim Burton. Now you've seen the same thing with this Batman filtered through Christopher Nolan. Batman starts out actually somewhat gritty, goes to the far opposite, yet has slid further and further back down the gritty scale in the live-action products. Now, we're not speaking for the animation products, however.
No, but there is basically, I think... Okay, the clear thing that we have with Batman is that after the 70s, you have two ways of doing Batman. You have the gritty way. It was in part the original intent, because actually, I agree, and if you read some of the original comic book stories... They were actually quite dark for a children's comic of its time, as in the characterization of the Joker is something that shows it really well. He starts off as a psycho serial killer and then becomes, mm-hmm. like, you know, this, like, hilarious, clownish character that is kind of really unthreatening. Then, like, you have the pinnacle of Batman's silliness and campiness, which is, of course, I speak of none other than the 60s show with Adam West, which here... Yeah, I'm going to say this was actually my introduction to Batman as a kid, because in the late 80s, it was shown on TV in Argentina. It was only later on that I actually started reading the comics and stuff and seeing it. In a way, it was interesting because the show did introduce the concepts fairly well. But if, you know, as a child, I was unaware of the actual irony and the actual sarcasm of it. Because what they actually did at the time is that at the time they were making the TV show, the comics had abandoned the gritty idea because of the comic book code. And so so when the people making the show were tasked with making it, they looked at what the comics were at the time and they were like, this is pure, this is like really uninteresting. So what we'll do is we'll grab whatever campiness we see in this and we're going to exacerbate it as much as we can. Which is interesting to me because a lot of the times when people talk about this old show, they talk about it in terms of like it being like a ridiculous relic of the past. But it's like, no, it was always intended to be really, really ridiculous. The people doing this were perfectly cognizant of that fact.
Well, you want something that actually really highlights this dissonance you get of the ridiculousness compared to the newer Batman products.
Go on.
Watch Batman XXX, the Batman porn film produced by, forget his name, but it was released by Vivid, the one that they spent like a couple $1 million on.
What?
Where basically, you hadn't heard about Batman XXX?
No.
So it was directed by Alex Braun, and Alex Braun has done a couple of these that have been super faithful to their originals. And it's very cool with Batman. Like, he loved the original TV series.
Okay.
For a porno, he will do these spot-on parodies of the 60s show that will be intercut with 40 minutes of fucking. And you're just like... When I watched it with friends, because we knew we had all heard about it, we were like, oh man, we need to watch this. So it's like me and two other dudes I'm really good friends with, and we start watching it. In the beginning, we're like, this is hilarious, because it's a spot-on parody. And two of us are big film nerds. One of us was not. So, like, we're making commentary about how it, like, mirrors the original Batman movie, blah, 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 blah. And then we get to the part where they've kidnapped Batman's girlfriend for two episodes in the original, and they begin to start fucking, and the fucking just goes on for 30 minutes. And we're about, like, we get, like, 20 minutes in, we look at each other, and we're like, this is incredibly boring. Let's skip ahead to where the fucking ends. And everyone's just like, yeah, let's do that. And that's, like, that's how we basically watch the rest of it. Because the parody was really well done, because it was smart, and it was snappy, and it was paying attention to kind of the TV series. And, like, playing, it recognized exactly what you said, of that when they made the TV series, they knew exactly how ridiculous it was, and so they played that to the hilt when they wrote it. And then you contrast it with the most adult of adult entertainment, and you're just like, this can't match up. Well, one thing is very lovingly produced, and the other thing is just like, oh, yeah, we need people fucking some more. Are they done yet? Okay. And I should also note that another company also did make a Batman parody as well, but apparently theirs was set in the Batman Begins Dark Knight universe, and I have heard can be unsettling creepy, because their Joker does, like, Heath Ledger Joker, not, like, Cesar Romero Joker. So, yeah.
I'm going to say that I'm a fan of the Joker as a really interesting kind of serial killer kind of character, and I will still say that I love the Cesar Romero Joker. I love it, because I actually think that is really the basis for the Mark Hamill Joker.
Do you want, like, a mental image that you may not be able to scrub from your brain?
Oh, you've already kind of accomplished that, but let's keep going. Go on.
Cesar Romero Joker, pants off, getting his dick blown.
Oh, no.
Exactly. There's two things it doesn't meet, because the Cesar Romero Joker is a specific kind of Joker. And so that's why sometimes, like, when you either try to make Batman too realistic, or you try to argue that Batman must always be realistic,
yeah,
it doesn't work. Because when you take really silly Batman, then you insert realism into him through the vehicle of the penis, getting a blowjob. It's just like, it takes, like, whatever, it basically takes your entire product and it just falls apart in your hands. You're just like, oh. When I was watching, my friends were like, oh man, are they gonna have put, like, makeup on his penis? Because that would have been, like, hilarious. A great, like, layer joke of where he doesn't just have face makeup, he has makeup all over his body. But no, he takes off his pants, and it's just like, it becomes generic American-produced hetero porn, and you're just like, I'm not feeling this anymore. This has gone straight in creepy, boringville.
But this is the thing that, any time that you have had any hint of sexual stuff in terms of the Joker, it has always been very creepy, and I've only ever needed hints of that for it to be creepy. You know, the little, like, you know, the bit where he's really threatening Maggie Gyllenhaal in The Dark Knight, or a lot of the stuff that happens with Harley Quinn in the animated series. All of that, it's already creepy enough. I don't need, thank you for the image, by the way, because I now, you know.
Yeah.
I
could give you a less creepy image of, like, I'm trying to remember, because there were so many Catwomans in the original 60 series, the Catwoman in Batman XXS is kind of a pastiche of several of them. But pick your favorite of the two, maybe three. I know there's Eartha Kitt and somebody else. And think about her giving Batman and Robin blowjobs. Because it's no longer the kind of adolescent fantasy of engaging with a very sexy woman. It's the fact of engaging with a very sexy woman. And sex can be very fun with a partner, but at the same time, sex also involves a part where you have to stop, you have to position things. And you have to kind of talk through, like, weird positioning problems, or maybe, like, you have to take some time. You know?
Yeah.
It's not always the adolescent fantasy. There is no more any fun in watching a woman... Basically, what the sex scenes become is people dressed up like these characters having sex.
It's very apt, I think, for where people succeed and fail with Batman. And this is, again, just my opinion. But, yeah, I think that there's just, like, this limit to how realistic you can do it. And this is the interesting thing with Tim Burton. Tim Burton took the grid and the darkness, but not the realism.
Basically, Batman is only realistic in the context of the other universe. When Batman doesn't exist in a universe of people full of, like, Superman and Green Lantern and, like, basically the Justice League, he's no longer realistic. He has to have all the other crazy, in some ways, yeah, magical shit surrounding him to make him realistic.
Okay, so I guess, like, I guess we've kind of exhausted this topic a bit. I mean, we could keep going, but as always...
Wrap us up for this week as to, I guess I've started calling them endorsements. What I am going to endorse is a fantastic new fictional character. I will say thank you to Glenn Weldon of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast because he turned me on to this and it is fantastic. The Twitter is Your Aunt Diane. That is all one word, Your Aunt Diane. Have you ever known that hippie who owned the Etsy store that they filled with knitted penises and they engaged in delightful aromatic new age medicine? This is perfect. Only they're 45 years old. It is the perfect parody of that person who is your friend and you really love them, but sometimes you wonder what the fuck they're doing with their life.
I will just recommend it. I will just second that endorsement.
I feel like I should read one of, or a sample of some of one of the best tweets. So I'm going on a cleanse starting tomorrow where I drink lemon juice, cayenne pepper, maple syrup, and bear semen for 10 days. I love the fact that I finally defecated out that earring I swallowed last month. I love this cleanse! !
Oh,
exactly. If you're not following your Aunt Diane, you should be following your Aunt Diane. Because I know all you good feminist hipsters, you know this person.
Yeah, you know this person, you sometimes are this person, or you're related to this person. Or maybe this person is your mom. I don't know.
If you know, and it's your mom, I'm sure you love them to death, but sometimes wonder what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah. From my end, I just want to... I mean, I know I plugged Hey Ash, What You Playing before, but since we're talking about... I was talking about this video in particular, I'm plugging the Hey Ash, What You Playing Dark Knight episode. Again, just 2 or 3 minutes. The YouTube link is on the show notes. Check it out. I also want to mention that we now have a Facebook for Queers with Beers. It's a Facebook page, and you can like us there.
I will have a link in the show notes if you're lazy. So
exactly. And we are in the process of figuring out if we can be published on iTunes. So we'll keep you posted with that, but we'll also tell you in the show notes how to add us on your iTunes through an RSS feed.
Yeah, hopefully by the time this comes out, we will have been approved by them. And that is the alarm wrapping us up.
Thank you very much for listening to episode 4, and we will see you very soon.
For more information about the show, your hosts, or our theme music, please visit the blog at queerswithbeers.wordpress.com. Queers with Beers is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution share-alike license. I feel like this is one of those nerd things that's just not required. It's like, now, here's the part of the nerd podcast where we read quotes and funny voices making fun of movies. Next, we'll be having an argument over Batman versus Superman. Kryptonite cannot be involved in this argument. That is final.
But kryptonite is his only weakness, so how can you... How can you have that argument?
Because we're more interesting than those motherfuckers, right? We will not give in to the easy argument.
But that makes it more difficult because the very setting of Superman makes it so that we can't actually...
Oh, shut the fuck up. Permanent joke. Fuck you, joke ruiner. Fuck you.